Hotline, Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. We're entering week three of the college football season, and joining us to break it all down is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitchell, always appreciate our weekly chats with you. Before we look ahead to week three, I got to look back on the last 2 weeks. South Carolina loses to UNC. Florida loses to Utah. LSU loses to Florida State. Alabama loses to Texas. Texas A&M gets embarrassed by Miami. It has been an incredibly tough sledding for the SEC. Is the ACC and the Pac-12 just that much more improved this year, or is the SEC down?
Yes. And okay. With questions like that, usually a little bit of both. Now, we knew the Pac-12 was going to be much improved. And, you know, when you were mentioning some of those results, Carolina, the thing I was looking at quarterbacks. What was common in those games? North Carolina, South Carolina. Now, Spencer Rattler's a good player, but North Carolina the better quarterback. Miami, Texas A&M. Connor Wegman's a former five-star recruit, but Tyler Van Dyke was the better quarterback in that game. We knew going into this year that the Pac-12 is as deep in quarterbacks as any league that I can remember. And I've been doing this a while, you know, going back to my days at Athlon Sports when all we did was, you know, just all conference teams, ranking positions, ranking quarterbacks, all that stuff. There's so much depth there. And it's a quarterback sport probably more than ever. And we knew heading into this year there was a lot of SEC teams that were unsure at quarterback or had newcomers at quarterback, whether a transfer or a guy stepping in. So I think it's not to oversimplify things, but I think that's really it. I mean, the rosters of the SEC teams in those games were probably better than their opponents, but their opponents had better quarterback play.
Mitch Light is with us. I look at this Georgia team, and maybe it's, you know, my feelings of the rest of the league, feeling like any other team in the league is beatable, Alabama included. Am I just, you know, deflecting my thoughts onto Georgia, or does the SEC really feel as wide open as it has in a really long time? Why am I feeling this way about a Georgia team that's won back-to-back national championships?
Well, maybe it's because we haven't seen them yet really in a meaningful game. We haven't seen, you know, new quarterback Carson Beck have to make a throw when it matters. You know, will we find out this week against South Carolina? I don't know. Put it this way. If we have to find out if they can make the big play in a key moment, then maybe that's saying something about Georgia because of South Carolina's relative struggles. You know, they go to Auburn in week five. Auburn did not look good offensively at all against Cal. That's another game we didn't mention there. That was not a quarterback game because neither team really had a good quarterback in that game. But, you know, Georgia or the field right now, I'd take Georgia because some of the contenders have not been impressive, obviously. But, you know, it's still so early, and it's really hard to make any statements about Georgia when they play two home games against overmatched opponents.
Now, looking at this you know, top 25 or just college football in general, what Texas was able to do, Mitch, against Alabama, was it so much that Alabama didn't have a quarterback or the quarterback hasn't proven he can be that leader that they've had for the last, I don't know, 8 years? Or is Texas really that good?
I think if we took Texas's name off the jerseys and it was someone else, you look at the roster, the way they've been recruiting, especially at the line of scrimmage, they had the number one quarterback from the class of 2022, I believe, in Quinn Ewers. I know he reclassified. You'd say that's a really good Texas roster that's capable of going in and winning in Tuscaloosa. But the fact that we've all been disappointed or let down, whatever you want to say, by Texas, or just they don't rise to the occasion, I think we were just kind of expecting that. So I think it's, like before, it's a combination of everything, and they had the much better quarterback play. But look at this Alabama team offensively. And it's all we grade Alabama against Alabama because, like, the elite Alabama teams. But offensively, they're not as good at quarterback, running back, wide receiver, or offensive line as some of the better Alabama teams in recent years. And it's clear they don't have Bryce Young to overcome some of those issues. You know, last year's team, we can say they were down, whatever, but they were also one or two plays away from making the playoff. You know, they lost to Tennessee, very, very close game, obviously, then LSU on a two-point conversion. So that season could have gone another way. So I just think it's a combination that this is a great Texas team that showed some mental toughness that we don't typically see from that team, and then Alabama not being able to make the plays at the quarterback position that they needed to make.
Is this it for Jimbo? I mean, because this is it's becoming. Any other coach, I think, would have been fired by now. But I understand the massive contract and everything else. You've had guys that have departed the university, five-star guys that have left. But it just seems like no matter what he does, even changing your offensive coordinator, he still can't get it right.
Yeah, I was on the Texas A&M bandwagon. In fact, I was in the entire athletic college football staff. I was the only person to have Texas A&M in the top 10 in the preseason. And no, I was feeling pretty good about that after LSU lost to Florida State. I was feeling pretty good about my Texas A&M number 2 pick. I was feeling really good when it was 10-0 Texas A&M at Miami. I almost sent some Slack messages to people at work taunting them, but I didn't hit send, fortunately. So, you know, this team has too much talent to not, you know, losing at Miami, it's no crime. You know, it's they should win that game. They've got more talent. It's not all about recruiting, I know that, but they have so many dudes on the defensive line, and they got a former five-star quarterback, and they've got skill. Evan Stewart's a great wide receiver. And Bobby Petrino, you know, you can say what you want about him, but talk to other people in the game. He has one of the best reputations as a play caller. Maybe, you know, there's a difference between having schemes and drawing up plays and calling plays at the right time, and he is known as one of the best in the game, is calling plays on game day. So I'm mystified. If they don't turn around this year, I don't know what else they do, because that's like the one final missing piece was making a change at the coordinator position. So it's not trending in the right direction. The good thing for them, that was not a conference game, mm-hmm. and Alabama and LSU have already lost. So I'm not going to sit here and say they'd be my pick to win the West, but the competition in the West isn't nearly what we thought it was going
to
be.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football. Clark Lee will join us at 1:30, as he does every Tuesday. But Mitch, give me your assessment. Mitch has talked about this before. His son Gabe goes to Wake Forest, so grew up a Vanderbilt fan, now at Wake Forest as a student. So you've been watching Wake Forest, obviously, pretty closely in general, but especially the last couple of years. So give me your assessment of why Wake was able to win the way they did.
Can I give you an assessment of Gabe's text to me before the game?
Oh, yes. We've got to hear this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you take your kid to games, you buy him jerseys, you take him to Omaha, you take him to bowl games, and then you send him away to school, and he sends you an expletive laced text before the game taunting your beloved alma mater. I mean,
good grief. Okay. Teenage angst.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm done with that. So there's different ways to look at this game. Bottom line is Vanderbilt lost and did not make the plays to win the game. And the thing about this is sometimes when you turn the ball over three or four times, especially in a half, it's because the other team's forcing you into it. Like when you're playing in Alabama, Georgia, or an LSU, they're pressuring the quarterback. No one can get open. And, you know, you throw a bad pick. I thought all of the Vanderbilt's mistakes were self-inflicted. That doesn't make them any better. That's no excuse. But I thought they needed to be better at the quarterback position. You know, A.J. Swan really struggled early, made some better throws. Like, I thought after the first two offensive possessions, and then obviously the delay, Vanderbilt looked a lot better offensively. But you can't go in against a solid team on the road and make those turnovers. And obviously your best player, Will Shepard, fumbles the ball before the half, and it's not just losing possession, it's giving them free points there. So, you know, there was obviously some positive signs. You look at some of the advanced stats, you know, and winning plays and all that, or Vanderbilt did some really good things, but bottom line is that's a game that, from a talent standpoint, they could have won. They weren't overmatched from a talent standpoint. They might have been overmatched program-wise. You know, this is Dave Clawson's 10th year there. They were really bad 2, 3, 4 years in. But they expect to win. They expect to beat Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt kind of goes into that game saying, oh, can we take the next step? And I think it kind of showed there. You know, that's a game that Vanderbilt had the talent to win but did not execute nearly well enough.
And it sets up a very important game next week in Las Vegas at UNLV, one of those times. And you see this now more than maybe you did, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, where teams will actually go play a road game against a team like UNLV. UNLV happened to be playing the 2:30 game on CBS. How they got in there, I don't know, but I flipped over. I was like, wow, here's a chance to scout UNLV. Of course, they're in the Big House. They're sort of overmatched by Michigan, who's got really high expectations. So what's your assessment on UNLV, because the line is would suggest this game could go either way.
Yeah, I think what earlier in the week Vanderbilt was a 2-point favorite. Probably, you know, before the season, you probably would have said Vanderbilt favored by more. But UNLV, like you said, they didn't get anything done offensively, but they didn't get completely blown out. I mean, it wasn't like one of those like 28-0 in the first quarter.
Right.
You know, don't know a ton about them. Barry Odom is the head coach. You know, obviously former Missouri defensive coordinator, then head coach. So, you know, it's one of those, it's a huge barometer game. I mean, you can talk about progress and all that stuff, but you know, especially Clark Lee used the term wake up call last week. You know, if you have a wake up call losing to Wake and then you go and don't beat UNLV, like what's next? You know, so I think there's a lot of pressure on this team to play well and win the game. Clearly Vanderbilt's going to be the more talented team out there, but UNLV watches tape. They saw Vanderbilt struggle with Hawaii, a team in their conference. They saw them turn the ball over against Hawaii. This is a game UNLV probably thinks they're going to win.
Now, Mitch, I got to ask you, and I hate doing this because it's my university. Michigan
and my wife's alma mater.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
I can criticize my son, but I can't say anything bad about my wife.
Exactly. So can they? I think they can, if you're asking me personally, because they're bringing Coach D'Antonio back to help out and assist. Harlan Barnett will be the interim coach there, but Coach D will be back to assist. He will have on headsets. He will be on the sideline. But can they overcome this season? I'm not worried about the program as a whole. I'm not. But can they overcome what has happened?
Yeah, I think we see things like this go multiple ways. And, Derek, you've been on a lot of rosters that have had some adversity. You know, and I think we'll learn. I mean, I don't want to overstate this. We might learn what kind of the players thought of Mel Tucker. Like, if there was some, you know, not that they're glad to see him go or anything like that, but they could kind of, you know, rally the troops, so to speak, and come together and prove to everyone that it wasn't about the coach, it's about the team and all that. So I think, not to be like corny, I think most of these kids are pretty resilient. It's still so early in the season. I don't think – it's probably a shock to their system this past week, but I think – and this is probably a very difficult week for them – but I think Mel Tucker's presence or not won't really if they're a 7-5 team or an 8-4 team, I think that's what they're going to be, regardless of whether Mel Tucker's the head coach.
Mm-hmm. Last one for you, Mitch. Mitch Light is with us. Who's the best team in the country?
I would still say Georgia. If you wanted to say Texas, you know, if you're doing it, just depends on how you view like a ranking. If you're doing your ranking, you know, you can get. You can make really solid arguments that Georgia should be the number one team if you had them ranked number one. If you're talking about, like, a resume ranking, it's got to be Texas. That's the thing about, you know, we don't know how Alabama's going to do this year. But let's say they have a down year again and they go 9-3. I still don't think a team's going to have a better win this year than at Texas. Maybe if Ohio State and Michigan are both state top five teams and the winner of that game. But, you know, that's the thing about that Texas. When you're ranking wins, that win Texas, like, they can always point back and say, we won at Alabama, no teams win at Alabama. So I would say if I were doing a ranking and I had Georgia or Texas, obviously Michigan has looked very good. Ohio State's passed its early, easy test there. So, but it would be Texas or Georgia.
Not no teams, Mitch. Just two.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, just want to make sure you didn't forget about that.
I wonder if you're paying attention. Oh. You know, sometimes talk radio hosts ask a question and their mind wanders. They send a text. So I want to see if you're paying attention.
Dialed in. I won't let anyone forget it. Mitch, okay. Appreciate you for stopping by. We'll chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
Yep. Awesome. Thanks, Mitch. Mitch Light of The Athletic. And that's what I want to get into coming up next is the Alabama of it all. Is the shine off of the Alabama apple after they lose to Texas and after a 10-2 season last year? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.